I brought you a special present.
What is it?
Open it up.
As I was limping over there to beat him. If you grab the guy's face mask and twist his head, then, like I tried to do to Terry Obey that cut me into the mud, that is something that's different, and that's a penalty.
Stories of violence.
So I was limping over to beat him. That is a great line.
The other one's about ripping another guy's head off with his face mask, Dave. Dave just really knows how to spice up a good story time.
I would like to say that I'm not proud of those moments, but that would be false.
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like you are.
They made you who you are.
I was going to say, I don't know
if you were
like
still doing that.
Bob, I always say this, remember the line from True Lies? It's like, have you ever killed people? It's like, yes, but they were all bad.
People had it coming.
I would say that about, those stories.
They
were all bad.
Well, we've got two great storytellers here. We do story time every week. We've got Dave Wyman here, and we got the Graz sitting in for Jim Moore, whose daughter is getting married tonight. So, again, congratulations to him.
Yeah, absolutely.
And his daughter. Who would like to start?
This is the 40-year anniversary of my greatest sports regret.
Sports regret?
Sports regret.
Today is the 40-year.
Today is the 40-year. You know what happened 40 years ago today? February 22nd, 1980? Now that I said it, you should get it.
1980, February 22nd.
Hockey.
Oh.
The Miracle on Ice.
Miracle on Ice.
And your regret?
My regret is I could have gone to the game.
Really? It was in Lake Placid, New York?
Yeah, I was in college. I was 19 years old. I was in college in New York City, which is about 5 hours away. Now, let me give a little background as to why I didn't go. So, 2 days before the Olympics started, the U.S. team played the Soviet team at Madison Square Garden. Final exhibition game for the U.S. team. And we went to that game. Me and a bunch of buddies from school went. And the score was 10-3. The Russians won. But I can't emphasize enough how that was not the game. It was 6-0 after one period. They called off the dogs. The game, if they had played it hard, they would have won 20-0. It was no contest. Utterly, utterly no contest. So knowing that going in, right? A friend of mine had I think his dad had bought a strip of tickets for the hockey games. So you could buy them in advance.
Mm-hmm.
And I forget what it was, game J or game L or something like that. So it plays out the way it's playing out. The Russians, I looked some of this up to make sure I remembered. They'd won their first two games, I think, 17-4 and 16-0.
These are football scores.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, against teams that couldn't play. And they had a couple of tough games at the end. So they were tested. They played a Finland team, that team the U.S. beat in the gold medal game,
mm-hmm.
and beat them 4-2. And they had like six guys in the Finland team went on to play in the NHL. And they beat Canada 6-4 to get to the medal round. So they had actually been tested a little bit, too. So even though the U.S. had won the game against Czechoslovakia, which got everyone excited, and then won three more games, if you had gone to that game at Madison Square Garden, there was no way. There was no way in 2 weeks they were going to win that game. It was not possible. So my buddy said, my dad is not going to the game. Do we want to go? And we got nowhere to stay. It's like a six-hour drive. Now, what people don't remember, a lot of people don't remember, the game was tape delayed. Mm-hmm. It was not shown live.
Mm.
It was at 5 o'clock. So we're going to have to leave in the winter, 10 in the morning, try and get up there in time. We're going to be able to stay over afterwards. We're going to have to drive back. And I kept telling myself, why would we do this to see him get buried? I mean, there's no chance. There's no chance. So we didn't take the tickets. We didn't go.
Hmm. And then what was the reaction after you saw what happened? Did you call him up and go, can you believe we blew this? Or what?
I don't think we spoke for a long time after that, actually.
Did you blame each other?
He blamed me. Yeah. I really emphasized that it wasn't worth going.
Right.
I made the point because my buddy had not gone to the game at Madison Square Garden. But there was no way.
If you saw that game, though. Right? I mean, when they killed him, I mean, you would be like, come on, this is a throwaway, right?
You would know that, this is going to be such a letdown.
Yeah.
Just like the gasoline lines and how bad everything is, because they're going to get buried by these guys. They're going to get these guys are actually going to try this time.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't trying the first time and crushed them.
Right. It's funny. I remember I found out that news. We were going to play Fallon High School, which is in eastern Nevada. Or maybe it's like... No, I can't remember. It was like a 2-hour bus drive to go and play basketball. And when I found out, we were just passing the Mustang Ranch.
Everybody remember the Mustang Ranch?
I've never heard of it.
It was a house of ill repute.
Oh.
Where most
a franchised house of ill repute. There are many Mustang ranches.
Are there now?
Yeah.
Yeah. That was it was a place where many a friend of mine went to be deflowered.
I took my brother, my little brother, to be deflowered at a Mustang Ranch.
Did you? Yeah. So that's my memory. Oh, is that the Kit Kat or
Kit Kat Lane?
Yeah. That my dad's sawmill was like 5 minutes from there.
You're kidding.
Yeah, so you know, it's out in the middle of nowhere and there were that place was so wild, Nevada was so wild that there were actually wild horses.
Just running around.
It's
unbelievable,
horses.
Man.
Yeah,
when you drive from Reno to Lake Tahoe and you go through Carson City.
Yeah.
And Carson City was and probably still is pretty small.
Yeah.
There were hardly any lights or anything like that. And then there was this brilliant red glow.
Yeah, you go
about
east.
A half mile off the road.
Right.
And that was it, Kit Kat Lane.
Well, when you watch that game on tape, you see it now. What was the crowd reaction like? Was it something along? I think of massive upsets in sports, and one of the greatest of all time had one of the most muted responses you're ever going to see.
Tyson Douglas.
It was in Japan. It was a silent building, and you're looking at one of the greatest upsets, not just in boxing but in sports. This is a 42-1 underdog.
Everyone was completely jazzed for the game. Most of them hadn't been to the Garden. So they thought the U.S. could win. And they were actually, you know, when they didn't go down big early, the Russians scored the first goal. And I think they were up, I think it was 2-0, and the U.S. scored a goal to make it 2-1. And then they scored a real late goal. Mark Johnson scored it, as a matter of fact, to tie the game at 2-2. And the Russians pulled Tretiak, the goalie, which was, I remember that being the most bizarre thing of all. And then the second period was just an assault. Jim Craig, you know, as they say, when hockey goalies have a great day. He stood on his head. They just assaulted him. And they somehow stayed in there and then got two goals in the third period. Ruzioni's goal was, I forget who got the goal before him, but it was a minute or two later. And they had the lead, that's the thing, with 10 minutes to go. They had 10 minutes to try and skate out the game, and it was, the crowd was unbelievable, and it was just, it was remarkable. It was remarkable. And at no time did I think, I felt like the Russian players, that I think the U.S. is going to win until
it's over.
30 seconds. They're going to win this game.
Wow.
You kept waiting for the comeback.
Well, I knew the result. So, I mean, I was just amazed that they didn't come. It was just astonishing and could not believe it because, again, that first game was like high school kids playing NFL. Tom Wassel playing running back. But running for 3 touchdowns in an NFL game.
Right. Yeah. That's beyond impossible.
Could not happen.
206, Groz is the best storyteller. Wyman's pretty good, too. What do they have in common? They're old, like me. Old guys have great stories. Yeah. So, Dave,
mine is actually about the combine. By the way, you know, Al Michaels, do you believe in miracles? That whole call. I got a chance to meet him this year because Rabel knows everybody. And just, you know, seeing that guy, I thought about that call when I'm standing
there.
What
everybody
there.
Thinks about.
Yeah, Rabel's standing there talking to him, and I'm like, wow, this is the guy.
Al Michaels was just a young, I mean, yeah. I knew him as I knew of him. He was a San Francisco Giants baseball play-by-play guy and had just gotten the network gig with ABC. He hadn't been there very long.
Yeah, yeah, just legendary guy.
Amazing call.
Well, I told a story last week about the combine and how Trent Kirchner, one of the scouts for the Seahawks got in there, and it was just him standing by the doorway, giving out, you know, his resume and, you know, talking to people and stuff like that. Stood out there for like 3 days. And then finally somebody gave him a badge and he got in and he went and he taps on a guy's shoulder. Guy turns around. It's John Schneider and he ends up getting a job.
Wow.
Yeah. So, but the combine, the first year that I went there was 1987. It was the first time they had it in Indianapolis. You might remember this, Groz. They used to have different combines. There was like one in Dallas.
Yeah.
And then I don't even know if there was one in Indy, but there was like two or three different.
There was more than one.
Venues. Yeah. So this was the first year where it was all together. So my experience as a player going there, it was just high pressure, you know, going there knowing I'm going to go out and compete with all of these guys that are the best players, you know, in college football. And so I get there, I'm kind of nervous. And the first thing, they give me a key to a room. You remember Bruce Armstrong? Just a
sure,
big monster
with the Patriots.
Yeah, and he's in there like Ring of Fame. Well, I go and I open the door and I start to walk in and there's Bruce Armstrong sitting there on the bed, and there was only one bed, and he was naked.
Jeez.
And I'm like, and he looks up at me and I'm like, oh, I think they made a mistake. So I go down, you know, and then end up getting my key changed. But one of the things that they gave you at the combine, which this was so cool back in the day, like now you can go online. I mean, I've gone online and ordered Dragons gear, XFL t-shirts and everything. But back then you just couldn't get that kind of stuff unless it was in a store.
Right.
You know, if it was at the Big Five in your town. But so they had socks, like two pairs of socks with a little NFL logo and shield on it. You know, there was shorts and t-shirts and everything. And then you had your combine t-shirt, which I gave to my stupid girlfriend, and I never got it back. But
stupid girlfriend.
Yeah, but you know, that kind of stuff was like really cool, right?
Yeah.
So I end up getting my roommate. Well, it ends up being Mark Ingram Sr. And we'll get into his past in a minute, but you'll not be surprised to hear that he was a receiver, and I think he was out of Alabama. I know his son went to Alabama.
Yeah, his son did.
I'm not sure where he went, but he was there too, and we were on different schedules because the linebackers would go, you know, and do the same day as, you know, with the D linemen or whatever. He was a receiver, so he left before I did. So I come back to my room, and he took all my swag, all the NFL stuff.
You're kidding.
He took it. Well, it was either that or it was the maid. But I just never, and I always thought I would go up and say something to him because we played the Giants a couple of times, and I never did. Because, you know, I wasn't.
Say, those socks look familiar, man.
Yeah, well, I wasn't 1,000% sure it was him, but.
Did you take my stuff?
Yeah. Hey, do you remember that? I mean, I told you the story the other day. One guy didn't even remember us staying in the same room together. Yeah,
that's
but.
Made a heck story. Of an impression on that kid.
But it may not surprise you to hear that he was arrested in 2008 for money laundering and fraud. And one of the reasons, and his son is Mark Ingram Jr., who played at Alabama. I believe he won the Heisman Trophy. And then he went on to play, you know, he plays for the Baltimore Ravens.
Yeah.
He's in New Orleans. But how he got caught was that he was going to one of his son's games, and they knew that he was going to be there. I think he was going to the Sugar Bowl 2009. But anyway, he ended up doing 5 or 6 years. So that was one experience when I got there. The other one was, you guys will like this. Remember Hardy Nickerson?
Yeah. Great linebacker.
Hardy Nickerson is a great linebacker. He got drafted in the 5th round the year that I got drafted.
Tampa, right?
No, he got drafted by Pittsburgh, and he played there for about 6 or 7 years, and then he ended his career in Tampa. He was a really good pro player, but he got drafted in the 5th round.
Wow.
I was the 2nd round. And then there was another guy there named Rick Graff, and I refer to him as, we all call him Richard Gere. Is it Richard Gere or Richard Gere?
Gere.
Yeah, because he looked just like Richard Gere, and he was one of those workout warriors that nobody had heard of. And I remember him even saying he ran a really good 40 and tested well, and he was like, yeah, man, I was supposed to be like a late-round draft choice. Now they're talking about drafting me in the 2nd round because he had this really good workout at the combine. He ends up getting drafted like 2 spots ahead of me.
Wow.
And so it wasn't, you know. But then Hardy Nickerson got drafted in the 5th round, and the thing that I remember about him, the reason why I'm bringing it up, it took him about 1.5 hours for them to draw his blood because he could not stand needles.
Oh.
And here he is, this big, tough, you know, 2-time All-Pro, 3-time Pro Bowler. Guy had played in 200 football games, 1,600 tackles, 12 interceptions, 21 sacks. I mean, just he's a Hall of Fame type of player. And he went to Cal. So, we were kind of never talked or anything like that. But, you know, he couldn't have a needle go into his arm. It took him forever, and I'm just sitting there looking at him going, you're kidding me.
So, I mean, how did they wind up doing it? So it took 1.5 hours.
Finally, you know, he had to.
They held him down with 8 people.
That's what I'm wondering.
They brought, like, a team of psychiatrists in there or something. I don't know what they did. Somehow they got him,
talked him down
to do that. But so then he ends up getting drafted in the 5th round. I don't know if he must have tested poorly or what, but the one thing that happened to me was that I tested very poorly because I had run on my pro day. I'd run like a, believe it or not, I ran like a 4.55, 5.40,
wow,
sub 4.6. It was inside in the gym. I'll say that. So that helped not being on grass. But I had a really good day. I went to the combine. I ended up running a 4.74. But the reason why, I think one of the reasons why is every doctor in the NFL, knowing the history of my knee injury and having seen that film,
ruled you out.
They had to yank on my freaking knee. And so my knee was all swollen up by the end of the day. And then, oh, go run a 40 now. But, yeah, all 28 teams then. And there were just some teams that were just not going to draft me no matter what because they'd seen the film and, you know, like, oh, my gosh, a knee dislocation. But yeah, I went on a few trips. So, anyway, yeah, I just performed poorly. But on that same vein, I would go on these trips. I took, I think, 4 pre-draft trips, and one was to the Washington Redskins, and I got in kind of a fight with the doctor because he was like, well, you know, I just don't know about that knee. And I'm like, well, I played the entire season last year and had no problem. And then, you know, he's like, well, it's going to be a different thing with Lawrence Taylor pulling on your leg. I'm like, look, Lawrence Taylor and I both play defense. We'll never be on the field at the same time. I think I said that in front of Joe Gibbs, and he kind of looked at me like, oh. By the way, Joe Gibbs had a bathroom off of his office, and I remember watching him apply a huge amount of hairspray.
Yeah.
Before he came and talked to me. And I was like, yeah, I'm not so sure about that.
He wants to look his best for you.
Joe Gibbs just won another Daytona 500.
Oh, did he? He's an owner, right?
He's an owner. And has won a bunch of them.
You know who loves the combine more than anybody?
Professor?
The Groz.
Oh, really?
Loves the combine.
No, you don't like it.
No.
Yeah.
I don't understand.
I thought you would have softened your stance maybe a bit. You sound like you softened your stance on spring training games and preseason football.
Not really.
No? Didn't I hear you today say, hey, baseball this weekend?
Oh, spring training a little more. Well, Clayton asked what I was going to do this weekend, and I just had to answer quickly. The Mariners.
I didn't really mean it. I just had to come up with
an No, spring training for the Mariners is a little more interesting this year just because of all the young guys.
Yeah.
Okay.
But no, preseason football.
Combine, nothing?
Combine's
don't
going
get
to,
anything out of it.
It's going to pro prime time.
Yeah,
no, I know.
And they've added more events to it, apparently. More
watching guys work out. I mean, it's just...
It's.
I don't know. I mean, it's like going to Seahawks practice when I would go.
Yeah.
Well, I can watch it. Everyone looks good to me.
Yeah.
Everyone can catch. Everyone's fast. Everyone hits.
I can't
tell the difference.
I don't like watching the 40, like the bench press.
You don't like watching the 40?
No, not at all. I mean, just give me the times at the end.
I like watching the big guys run. You get a kick out of that.
How about Tom Brady? You remember watching him?
Yeah, he just finished a moment ago. It was he was incredibly slow.
He was like a 5'3" or something like that. But what I like watching is the guys and how they move around. And two guys that stand out, well, like going through drills.
So you like the shuttle drill then?
Well, no, that's fine. But I'm talking about when they're sending them out on drops or making them run or do these drills through bags and stuff. And two guys that have always stood out to me that I just happened to be watching when KJ Wright was working out.
Hmm.
A kid out of Mississippi State was 2010, 2011 is when he was drafted. And I was like, this guy's really interesting, man. Look at how much, it didn't look like he was running that fast, but he was covering so much ground. And, you know, you look at the long legs and arms. And another guy that I watched that I was really impressed with was Hercules Mataafa. And it's too bad that Jim's not here because he plays so low to the ground. He was like a cat. It was like watching him, and they were really happy with him at the end of the year. Mataafa, he's in Minnesota now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think was he a free agent maybe there?
Might have been. Yeah.
Yeah, but I like watching that part of it, the vertical jump and the running and all that stuff. I just figure, and I didn't get this at the time. You didn't know what was going to happen when you went there. You know, you were vaguely aware, but now these guys
You didn't train for it the way they
did. I didn't
they've
train
got special
for it.
Trainers that they work with before this.
Right.
They'll go into training for the combine.
What I would like to watch, if they don't show on the combine, is the guys taking the test.
Oh, and hearing the
Wunderlich
test?
Is Wunderlich the only one they do?
Yeah.
Teams also ask their own questions?
I'd like the interview.
Oh, yeah.
You're talking about the interview.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
That's what you're talking about.
Yeah, I would love to be a fly on the wall during those interviews.
That's what I'd like to see.
Yeah. Right. Well, and then we saw last year, that's what happened with DK Metcalf, where Pete took his shirt off.
Yeah.
That was the interview. And I think you can request like 6 guys or 8 guys or something like that. So, you know, they requested DK come up there. And, yeah, I don't remember that part of it. I don't think they were doing that then. I'm not sure if all the NFL guys were there then. I think it was more just the scouting people. The organization was called Blesto, I think.
Yeah.
And it was a huge scouting organization. But
They did it kind of for everyone, didn't they?
They provided it for the whole NFL. And so, yeah, there weren't players there. But I do remember being in the where we took the Wunderlich test. And, you know, you also can train for that. Because when they have these long word problems for math, those take forever. You only got 15 minutes. I mean, they may be simple, but they're going to take too much time. So what you do is you skip those and you go to the easier ones, you know, with easy math problems where you don't have to do some story problem or something. So yeah, guys are training for that too, but I didn't get some genius amount. One of the guys from Stanford, the tight end Greg Beatty that we had, I guess he got like a 49 out of 50. And, you know, there's 50 questions, 15 minutes, I think, that you get. And I think I got like 33, 35, something like that. And
is that good?
It's okay. You know, it's great. I would I honestly would discount a guy for being too smart. I mean, I don't want a guy thinking too much.
Right.
You know, and like Bob likes to say, you know, some guys are real thinkers.
Yeah.
I know you say that sarcastically. But, yeah, I mean, sometimes guys, that was one of the things at Stanford that a lot of the guys, a lot of times the questions that they would ask, I would be like, just shut up and go hit the guy.
Yeah.
Okay? Right. Don't ask any questions. Just pull the trigger.
What do you think about the we never got into this, but Adam Schefter tweeted a while ago that the Broncos are not sending their assistant coaches to the combine, and the Rams are not sending their offensive and defensive coordinators to the combine.
Hasn't this been a trend the last couple of years?
Eh.
Well, according to the Bronco part of it, they said they're not sending them this year because they believe watching game film back in Denver is a better use of their time.
I kind of think that probably makes sense.
Well, the one thing I think is more important.
You don't need everyone to be there.
More important than anything now is the interview.
I would think that was the most important thing. Unless somebody comes in woefully out of shape, then you're going, all right, what does this say?
I mean, how's the guy going to react to money?
Yep.
How's he going to react to fame? How's he going to react to, you know, everybody knowing who he is? I mean, there's all kinds of, you know, things that you could ask. I mean, I just think that that's the most important part. So, yeah, you'd want to be there looking guys in the eye, that's for sure. But I agree from the standpoint of that versus watching football. I mean, you can do football a lot of different ways. You can get it done. Some of the greatest athletes, and like this Rick Graff guy, the Richard Gere guy, I mean, he ran like a 4.6, 4.5, 40, had this ridiculous leaping ability, everything, and you know, at the end of his career, I didn't see any tackles from him, but you know, he had 2 interceptions and 4 sacks, you know, his 4 or 5 years at Miami as a second round draft choice. And you know, it was, I mean, some of those guys that are really good athletes, that doesn't mean they can play football.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's just some immeasurables there that I think, you know, I would be, more than anything though, I'd want to be there just to look in the kid's eye and just see, I mean, does this guy really love football?
Yeah, yeah. To me, you would need 3 things. You need the game tape, right? Watch that, do the interview, and then just see the measurable. See how they came, what kind of condition they're in, just to get a gauge of their work ethic. Did they come in woefully out of shape? You know, how much do they weigh? How tall are they? All that. All the other stuff is fluff to me. The 40, that's more entertainment for me. 40s, bench press, all of that. You've got the game tape. That tells the story in the interview.
The other thing that they do, too, I know they do a lot of, go back and interview, like, how do they treat the equipment guys?
Right,
how do
they
treat the trainers?
Yep.
How do they, you know, go back? They'll sometimes go back to high school football coaches.
Figure out
the
psychological stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Who went to their birthday party? You know, that stuff.
Oh, that was in draft day with Kevin Costner.
That's right.
Nobody liked the quarterback. They didn't go.
All right, good stuff there. Good stuff. Story time with the Daves. Dave Grosby and Dave Wyman. Coming up, the Seahawks are going to have to make some changes along the offensive line this offseason, so how should they go about making those changes? We'll talk about that coming up with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
The 5 o'clock refresh is brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light, made to chill. Coming up in about 15 minutes, we'll go through some of your hateful, hurtful, mean texts, as we do every Friday. The Graz in with us today, and for Jim Moore. Meanwhile, Seahawks looking to probably make some changes on this offensive line. Not sure how many. It feels like there's potential for a whole bunch. We'll see how many actually happen, right? I don't expect Upati to be back. I don't think Ifedi's going to come back. They've talked about, or there's been talk about, the contract of Justin Britt, that they'd need to rework that because he's scheduled to make a bunch of money this year.
Well, that's 40% already you're talking about.
Yeah, and then some people have wondered, I think Fluker will be back, but some have even written about the idea that maybe they get somebody who's more of a pass-blocking guard, where he's a run-blocking specialist. I don't know if they'd make that change or not.
Why would they do that? I mean, that doesn't make any sense to me.
It's just part of the conversation. How much of it actually comes to fruition, I don't really know.
I just mean philosophically. I mean, I think that they've had great success with this getting back to the run sort of mentality, and you know, I mean, before Carson and Penny went down, I mean, it was working fantastic. I mean, you were looking at being the number one seed.
Right. Yeah, I think that I wrote something called Sackstravaganza 2, by the way.
Where's that?
It's on 710sports.com. 710sports.com. Yeah.
Okay.
And basically what I did, Graz, I went through and looked at, you know, every drive where the Seahawks sustained a sack. First, I did it on defense, and then I did it on offense, and got surprising results that they actually scored a lot of touchdowns. I have to go back and look at what I wrote to remember what it was. But one of the things that you found out is that, and I'm not putting this on Russell as far as sacks go, because that's what people are talking about when they're saying offensive line. You got to get somebody in here who can pass block, because we know they can run block. I mean, they have been the last 2 years. They were number one last 2 years ago, and this last year they were number three.
Mm-hmm.
So the run game is great. They're great run blockers. And then you could throw in that Carson, I think, is a fantastic superstar, which Jim gave me crap for one time saying. But, yeah, I think he
was last year.
Yeah.
Until he got hurt, he was a superstar.
Right. So, you know, I think you have to consider the fact that Russell – I want to say he deserved these sacks, but, I mean, he plays his way into some of them.
Sure
now,
he does.
Now, I think he does.
That's because he's trying to. He's one of those guys who can extend his legs to make things happen.
Exactly, and I think it's kind of a curse for him a little bit, because you can do it. You know, just because you can do it, you should you do it? I mean, that's the decision that he has to face. I mean, if you're Tom Brady or you were Peyton Manning, you know you're not going anywhere. So nope. You're going to dump balls off, and you're not going to, you know, you're not going to try to extend a play. You can't run. Russell can. So, but I thought one of the interesting things was that, look, every year he's been in the top 10 most sacked quarterbacks in the NFL. And in four of those years, they were either dead last or second to dead last in pass attempts.
Mm-hmm.
So even though he's not throwing it that much, there's not that many opportunities for sacks, he's still getting sacked.
And by the way, I know you don't have it in front of you, but what was their record those years? I'm guessing good.
Well, I mean, look, ever since Russell got here, they've won double-digit games.
Right.
Yeah, every year. Gone to two Super Bowls, gone to and won one. You lost one. You've been gone to the playoffs every year except for one, which is 2017. And he thrived in 2017. He actually ended up having a really good year. But he got sacked 43 times that year. He was number 10. But that was the 1 year in 17 and 16 both. He had 35 attempts. So, I mean, there's more opportunities for sacks there. So, but still, even when he's not in those years where he's been down, they've been dead last in the NFL with 26 attempts, 28 attempts, 25 attempts, he's still a top 10 guy getting sacked. So, I mean, that is not all on the offensive line.
Right.
I mean, some of it is on Russell. I'll say this, though. One of the things the study found that was, I'm calling it the study. It's just the stuff that I looked up. But anyway, my sextravaganza study here. What it revealed, guys,
research
was
proved.
That.
Careful how you say that, by the way.
Sextravaganza.
Yeah.
Trust me, the texters have
emphasized the A.
I told Stecker that he should, you know, put it sextravaganza and you'd get more clicks.
Yeah.
And then just say, oh, you know, I screwed up there. So,
whoops, typo.
I mean, we're always trying to get more clicks here. One of the things, you know, I called it sack management, because there was once or twice where he was sacked arguably out of field goal position.
Mm-hmm.
The vast majority of the sacks that he took, and I understand you can't control every sack, but most of them were at midfield or in his own territory. There was one time in Green Bay in the playoff game, actually, could have had a 46-yard attempt. Instead, it was a 50, and it went wide left. But I don't know if he'd have made it from 46, because Jason Myers last year was 55% in 40 yards or more. So there's one example. But for the most part, he did a good job of not getting sacked out of field goal range.
Yeah. The other part is he avoids a lot of sacks. There might be some
exactly.
He contributes to, and he hangs onto the ball too long, and then there are those other sacks where, or those other moments where he avoids a sack, where he's able
sure.
to keep a play alive or get rid of the ball when he's under immediate pressure. So,
well, I think philosophically you want a running offensive line, an offensive line that's better at run blocking than pass
sure.
blocking.
Yeah, because you have a,
that's how you're philosophically built. That's how you want
right.
to play. And I reiterate, I think last year. Had you not had the incredible bad luck, of losing your top two running backs, you'd have been in great shape.
Yeah, yeah. Top three, actually, with ProSize.
Yeah, good point.
Nobody wants to count ProSize.
I know
there,
they don't.
Know.
A couple of thoughts, Jake Heaps and Danny O'Neill weighing in on this, and Conklin's the name that's been coming up as a potential acquisition for that offensive line. Here's Jake Heaps talking with Danny and Gallant about that.
Definitely very expensive, and that's the part where the Seahawks really have to sit down and make a critical decision there is, okay, what is the decision that we have in terms of our cap dollars? Where do we want to spend? To me, I would love to see them, obviously being a quarterback, being an offensive guy, to see them add one more legitimate star offensive lineman. And this is with the consideration that they could restructure Justin Britt's contract. So that would leave three guys on your offensive line between Dwayne Brown, Justin Britt on a restructured deal, and a player like Jack Conklin, or another player that they could go with is Sonny, an offensive guard from the New England Patriots. Those two guys would be at the top of my list. And that way you have three, you know, veteran star players on your offensive line, and then you can kind of fill it in from there. If you don't go after a player like Jack Conklin, to me, with the right tackle position, you either go all in or you try and go cheap. And the cheapest way to get good young talent is to do it in the draft.
So there's Jake Heaps weighing in on that, and then Danny talking about the acquisition and what that would mean in terms of the decision that they made on Ifedi.
If you're going to choose to upgrade to Jack Conklin, I think you would have been better off exercising the fifth-year option and just paying Jermaine Ifedi what he paying him for that one season, because you're not making a multi-year commitment. You're going to make a three-year commitment to get Jack Conklin. You're going to pay big money for that. And I don't – the question of is he worth it? Well, he's worth whatever he gets on the open market.
That's a great point.
There's something to having your two tackles squared away and knowing that they're going to be – you know, because, you know, you can fill in. You've got Britt. You know, you've got, if you decide to, do you pay him? I think you do. You know, and then Jamarco Jones played really well. So, but I guess, to me, I'm still in the phase where it's like, if you're not spending money on pass rushers, it's kind of,
sure,
I know it's not wasted money, but I feel like
that was your glaring
that needs to be addressed
last year.
Yeah, and that trickled down to the secondary. It trickled down.
Absolutely.
I mean, it was very punitive, despite the fact that they won 11 games and got into the second round of the playoffs. How much better might they have been had they had more of a persistent pass rush? Not a dominant one, but just, I mean, 28 sacks. They just had nothing.
Well, and not a lot of pressures either.
Yeah, I mean, they just, they got.
Well, the thing is, you got to play tighter defense, though. I mean, there are so many times when I go through the season last year where it's just the ball's coming out. No defensive lineman is getting to those throws. There's not a D lineman in the league that can get there that fast. So there was a lot of that, the combination of those two things. But again, you know, they kind of limped through the whole thing and made, you know, got into the playoffs and won 12 games ultimately. But yeah, I think they can get a lot better improvement wise just from guys from last year and everything. But still, I don't think there's ever been a off season where it's been more obvious what they need.
Yeah.
Can you remember?
No.
I mean,
a couple of offensive line seasons where you're going, you got to do something about this line.
Yeah. But Bob doesn't like offensive line.
Yeah, but play. I mean, come on, man. You had a year where Mike Davis was your leading rusher with 250 yards. I mean, outside of Russell. Russell was the leading rusher.
Right.
But your highest.
No, you're right.
Offensive running back.
The thing is, they win.
Yeah.
Right.
They do.
It's hard to really
sort of
call
in spite
anything
of, though. You can't help but imagine what if they had competent.
Yeah.
Players in these spots.
They'd be terrible.
Yeah. All right. Speaking of terrible, we've collected all of the terrible things you say to us on the text throughout the week. Mean text. We do it every Friday. It's coming your way next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle. Graz, I don't know if you're aware of this, but people get on the text. They like to say mean things here and there.
You usually trade with them, if I remember.
Dave does, too. You'd be surprised.
You do, Dave?
Yeah, Dave does almost more than I do.
What do I do?
You'll go back and forth with the texters. Back when it was Graz and I, and then me and Graz and Tom, I was the only one that would look at the text and go back and forth. Graz would go, I don't listen to these psychos. I'm not reading that.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever done more than two or three a day.
A day?
It usually involves calling somebody numbnuts.
Jim's strategy is to say, you're right. Thank you for listening.
Yeah, Jim.
I'm stupid. You're right.
Dave and I have a similar approach.
Jim, well, I don't give out the address to the station. Meet me at 6:15.
Yeah. I recall Bob doing stuff
like
that.
That's Bob.
Yeah.
I went in one time and called a number. because the guy said something that was really bad.
I called the guy. You did?
Yeah. Don't you text that bleep in here, you punk. Yeah. So, but
Jim,
then a
Jim
lot
kills
of times,
him with kindness.
Yeah, Jim does that. A lot of times they don't realize that you're actually a person on the other side of it.
Right.
And so when you respond, they're like, oh, well, I was just kidding.
Yeah.
Like, yep. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, anyway. So we've created a segment where we collect the meanest of the
these
mean
are
tweets,
on
the
purpose.
The most creative.
We purposely, actively want these.
Yeah. Gotcha. As long as they're creative. If people are just texting it, oh, you stink, that's no good.
I don't know. The one guy
going to make you the cut.
The one guy that just said, F you, Dave, I thought that was pretty
funny. Yeah, but it was
funny.
In good context. It was because he was getting a bunch of compliments for something I don't remember, and I'm like, see, the text, it's going to his head. Somebody bring him back down to the earth. So somebody just texted in, bleep you, Dave. So it was... It was perfect timing.
I thought
for
it was
that.
Really good. I was like, I told the guy, we could be friends.
Maura, what do we have in store this week for Mean Text?
We're going to start out with towards the beginning of the week after the Greg Olson signing. The 425 sent in, he's bleeping old. It's like if they re-signed Wyman.
Wow. That's pretty mean.
I like that one.
See,
that's
least,
good stuff.
At least they're creative.
That's creative.
That yeah. Good.
Come on, Greg Olson's not that old. One time I had a buddy, this was like 2-3 years after I was out of the league, and I was like really in good shape, and I was fired up, and so I had a buddy that knew Holmgren, and he goes, I go, yeah, tell him, man. I'd still like to play. It's fantasy land yeah. for me. And so he came back, and he goes, yeah, I told Holmgren that. And I go, well, what'd he say? He goes, he said he'd love to have you if you weren't so old.
he didn't even text you that, huh?
Yeah, that was back when we delivered messages
personally,
person to person. Yeah.
What else do we have?
206 says, does Bob's job include bringing lemon squares and picking his co-hosts up from the old folks' home?
Oh, jeez.
Ouch.
What's with the lemon squares?
Yeah, do you have any?
I love those.
Don't. Oh, no. Oh. Never mind.
Apparently,
Cross
that's not your
up
job.
There for a minute.
I prefer lemon coolers. Do you know what the lemon coolers are? Those little cookies with the powder on there.
Oh,
they're
yeah.
They're lemony, and they got the...
Lemon. I can't mess with lemon.
Yeah. Lemon's a good flavor.
Lemon-infused olive oil is my new passion.
Is that right?
Oh.
This is what old people do. They sit around and talk about, have you tried this product?
Well, next time, maybe, you know, bring those lemon squares, Bob.
All right. All right. My bad. What else?
425 says, Dave, you're the Stanford Tree of radio hosts.
Oh, man. That is low. That's too low. That's
Dave's
a low
not a fan
blow.
Of the tree.
Don't like the tree?
No, I hate the tree. It's an idiot. Whatever drunken idiot's in there. One time I found out somebody we know.
Really?
Okay, I'll go ahead and tell it. It was Chuck Armstrong's son.
Oh.
Was the tree.
Was the tree?
Yeah, and this is when we kind of used to hang out a lot, and my wife, Shannon, she's like, Dave, you have to stop making comments about the tree because we would be in that company and everything. And I was like, yeah, that stupid tree, that drunken tree. It's the worst mascot ever. She's like, honey, you have to stop that. I'm like, all right. I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. I'm sure Chuck Armstrong's son is a very nice guy. I know that there's lots of Stanford people out there that probably hate me, but I just
I think the tree is
can't stand
I mean, I didn't go to Stanford, but I lived in Northern California for a long time. I remember him being very polarizing.
Yeah. Mm. I don't think
lots
you're alone
of,
in your
you're not alone.
Not alone in your dislike of the tree. What else did they say to us, these lovely people?
I remember when Stanford were the Indians.
Yeah. Mm. You know, they used to hand out Indian head stickers to guys about my age, and I remember the AD Andy, what was his name? Anyway, he came down and was like...
Andy Ludlam?
No. He was like, you guys got to take these off. You got to take these off right now. It was before a game. I think it was like a big game. Yeah, and so he was all panicked about that. And I was like, oh, what's the big deal? I didn't know what the deal was. But yeah, they were one of the first
to be politically correct.
To
yeah.
change, yeah.
All right, Bob, the 425 says, your head looks like it got crushed during jiu-jitsu, and you think commitment is a germ.
I don't know about the crush in jiu-jitsu, but you do have a small head, as we've talked
about. Bob's, how many Bob heads could fit inside Gras' head? Inside Gras' head?
Probably two.
At least two.
Two?
Yeah.
We used to do that. How many Altuves? Like, Roz, you'd be 1.5. Yeah, so...
Roz and I learned a lesson when we took our show pictures that I...
Yeah, we made a mistake.
How many Bobs?
Me in the foreground and Bob in the background. Oh, okay. Bob like a cartoon character.
Yeah, it was bad. It was That was a really, really big mistake.
What about the one where Bob's sitting next to... was it...
DJ Fluker.
DJ Fluker.
Oh, man, that was a funny one.
There's something about... Well, and I think you were probably in the background or something about it.
It was a background foreground one, too.
It was emphasized.
Andy's got a huge head.
That is a massive human.
He's got a big brain.
And I look like his little child sitting next to him.
There aren't many guys who can make you look small, Bob.
He made me look miniature.
All right, Dave, the 425 says Dave's place in Palm Springs is probably a ranch for his pet peeves.
Now, that's clever.
A ranch for pet peeves.
Graz, you haven't been here. He's been adding a new one every week. Like, single high safety is one of them.
He doesn't like people saying that. Single high safety or...
It's a bunch of people
trying
to sound
smart.
Saying
that you guard
someone. Guarding is so ridiculous. A lot of football people say that now.
And what's like the other one? Traveling.
Yeah, traveling. Mm-hmm. The single high safety thing is out of control. It's so stupid. It doesn't explain anything. But
yeah, everybody uses it.
Everyone does.
But the guarding thing, like, who's guarding that guy? I mean, that's for basketball.
Yeah. You're saying that in football now?
Yeah, people are saying that in football.
Football players have said it.
Really?
Bumpus said it the other day, and you went, oh, Bumpus.
You know why, Gruz? Because those are coverages, not guardages.
Right.
Yeah, coverage, cover one, cover two, cover three. It's not guardage one, two,
that's
three.
That's a legit peeve.
Right. Thank you. That's where apparently my pet peeves are down in Palm Springs.
On a ranch.
Where people go to die, apparently.
Any other ones?
Let's see. This one kept it simple. Dave, you're ugly. Graz, you're old. Bob, you're one of my favorites, and I wish you nothing but the best.
I think
don't know why you got left out.
I want to say that Bob, let's check the number and see if it comes from Bob's phone.
I would have been much more complimentary than that if it came from my phone. Bob, you handsome devil. What are you doing with those other two?
I'll tell you one time, Jim got me so good because I was arguing with somebody. It was something about Ray Lewis, I think.
Yeah.
So Jim's sitting over there where you're sitting, Graz. He texts in, Dave, you're an idiot for thinking this and blah, blah, blah. And so I respond to him, and then he comes over and shows it to me on my phone. That was a good one, Jim.
That is a good one.
All right. Any other ones?
We got a good one the other day when we had Bob Condotta on. The 360 says, Bob Condotta sounds like a surfer, which is weird because he looks like he just came from a knitting convention in every picture I've seen.
A knitting convention.
Oh, boy.
That's funny.
All right, good stuff. We do that every Friday. We collect them throughout the week for you angry people that say mean things to us. If you're creative, you may make the segment. Meanwhile, we're going to come back, talk some football. What's the latest with the CBA? We'll see what the professor thinks about all that. That's next with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Wow, you sure know a lot of stuff.
It's great to learn,
because knowledge is power.
We learn a lot. It is power, Graz.
I love that.
Graz was in today, so we did learn things. That's a certainty, right, Moore?
Oh, yes.
Learned?
Yes, we definitely did.
Was there a Homer Simpson in there in that intro?
Yes,
there
was.
You're a huge Homer Simpson fan, are
Big
you not?
Yes, I am.
Yes. Very clever. Good stuff.
I love The Simpsons.
To this day, right?
Oh, yeah. Still watch it all the time.
The new episodes are still solid.
Well, Matt Nelson works this show a lot, doesn't he? Matt is another guy who... Mm-hmm. We get deep on The Simpsons.
You guys can sit there and recite lines from episodes of 15 years ago?
With favorite years.
You know who one of my favorite characters is all time, speaking of sitcoms? Al Bundy.
Yeah.
Actually, because you can relate, Polkai,
I've
six
done
touchdowns.
A number of there's not only that, the State Worcester High School State Championship 1981.
Four touchdowns.
Also, the other day I taped off a section of the couch because my family was coming over. It was for the Super Bowl. My daughter, I sent a picture and my daughter called me a drama queen. But I put tape down and I'm like, you see that I get more than one cushion, okay? Because I'm dad and it's my house.
That's so very Al Bundy.
Al Bundy did that one time where he went on vacation, yep. But he stayed
I remember
home.
It.
Yeah, he taped it off and he's like, I don't hear anything. I'm not here.
What did we learn?
Well, that was something we just learned. But we learned that Graz had to dig deep for our show because Tom, Jake, and Stacy stole him beforehand.
Who is this guy?
It's Dave Grosby.
Hi, Graz.
Hi, Graz.
How are you, man?
I'm tired.
You're tired?
What?
Those guys wore me out the last segment.
Yeah, it was 15 minutes of fury.
15 minutes of labor fury.
Did you give them all your good stuff? You didn't throw your good pitches, did you?
I gave them a couple decent lines, but I've saved a few.
Okay, well, ration them out. We got 3 hours.
Yeah, we do.
Next time you come in for the show, these other hosts, they can't just come and, oh, we get the grog. No, you got to check with us first.
You're right, because they're young. And they've got a lot of energy.
You got to save your A material for us.
You're right.
Yeah, and you'll be with us day next week, right?
Yeah, the 26th.
The 26th, okay.
Thursday?
Sure.
When-
So we expect A material then.
You got it.
All right. What else did we learn?
We learned about a rather interesting hot tub experience that Wyman had.
Abe Gibron, thank you. He would
a guy you would not want to see.
Right. And he would go and get in the hot tub naked in there.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, and one
would
time,
he be the only one, or was everybody
Abe, there? Abe was a big fella.
He was a big, was a like, guy. Round guy.
A lot of him to see.
And one time he was trying to get in the hot tub, and he got high-centered.
That is such a bad visual.
It's even funnier that? The second time around.
A naked big man, high-centered. So like somebody lifted him into the tub, as you said.
Yeah, I mean, one leg, it wasn't touching on the outside. The other leg was not touching on the inside. And he was just kind of teetering there.
Sounds like it would hurt.
It's so funny.
You got Russ.
Well, he was like 75 years old.
Oh, man.
But there's some old NFL film of him screaming and yelling.
Yeah.
And he has
yeah.
some phrase that he says. I can't remember
what the phrase is, but I remember him running a little bit.
Yeah.
And just, oh, my God.
Yeah, he was just one of Chuck's guys that he would have around. Chuck had another guy named Tommy, this little guy from back in his neighborhood. His name was Tommy. I can't remember his Italian last name. But as best as I could figure, he was Chuck's hype man.
Yeah.
He would, like, talk about Chuck. And, oh, Chuck's tough guy. Chuck, you know, this and that. And Chuck that and everything. And then he would drive Chuck around and, yeah.
Need a hype guy.
I was talking about Gibbs today, Joe Gibbs, and spraying his hair. Chuck had a little of that in him. Chuck had a ring.
I always picture him with a hat.
He had a ring with a CK in diamonds.
Really?
For Chuck Knox. And I was like, oh, that's pretty big time there.
Monogram ring. Good for him. I still can't get over the visual of a large naked man high-centered.
I think you can see it.
Trying to get into a high-centered.
What else did we learn?
Oh, God.
We learned that there is not a lot of faith amongst this group in Jim's daddy-daughter dance abilities.
Huh. Yeah, they're doing I think, isn't there something with the Cougar Fight song, too?
Oh,
I believe they might be singing that. And then
that's a shocker.
Jim has been going to these dance lessons. And I've seen Jim kind of move around. We're talking wooden underwear here.
Yeah.
It's not good.
It is awkward looking.
I hope he does all right.
I've never heard that expression before.
Wooden underwear.
It certainly creates the visual, though.
Chuck Hall, fifth grade, Yuba Feather Elementary School.
Pretty random poll.
It's my friend Chuck Hall. Yeah, he was really funny.
That was his phrase.
That's a great line for a fifth grader.
Because we would have, yeah, exactly. We would have dances and stuff, and he would say, "Hey, you look like you got wooden underwear on."
That's a funny guy.
That's good.
It can't be worse than Dory Monson's his dance with his daughter at her wedding. Dory, oh my God! And he practiced. He was trying to do a box step, and he.
Wouldn't do it.
It was bad.
It was,
and so then he comes and goes, "Hey, it looks like you can really dance." And I'm like, "No, only compared to some."
Compared to you, yes.
Yeah, I'm like, no, I just stand there and Shannon does her thing, and I just try to not stand out.
You're just a prop. That's
the best way to dance. Yeah.
What else did we learn?
That's all the learning.
All right, that does it for us. I want to thank our guests today, John Clayton and Ryan Divish. Also, this week's edition of Get in the Cage is up there. Yakima's own Julian Arosa is today's guest, so check that out. He's in action tomorrow at the Emerald Queen Casino for Cage Sports 60. That's brought to you by the Emerald Queen Casino. If you missed any of it, head to 710sports.com, click the podcast button, scroll down to our picture and click on that. And everything you missed is waiting for you every day. It is Bob, Dave, and Moore. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll be back with you on Monday right here on 710 ESPN Seattle.